You're listening to Gameplay with Matthew Kaws on TSN 1050. Embrace the odds.
I want winners.
In terms of winners, we'll get to the Jays and the Orioles in a moment. By the way, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the second hour of Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaws. Gameplay on TSN 1050 is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I go and look at the old Twitter account here. I see trending. I see Kadri's name. I click on it, and it's just people tweeting, when is Kadri going to sign a contract? Well, how could that be trending? Like, that should not be trending. Unless there's actual news, I don't feel it should be trending. There's just NHL accounts going, where will Kadri end up? Producer Chris, there's no news here. There's no news.
There is no news here, but I think what's happening in that particular instance is a geolocation kind of thing. Your connection will be registered in Ontario, and they know they know that people love hockey here, so you're going to get as many hockey-related tags as you can get.
Okay, because I do always, yeah, no, that makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. But, okay, all right, because I got, like, Beasley, I got AL East, and I got something about Jagmeet Singh. That's what's on my Twitter account. And, of course, ceasefire in Israel with renewed strikes on Gaza. So my Twitter account, it's got a lot of range. Before we get to Matt's Monday mood meter, I don't know if this one's going to be included. Actually, let me ask you before I talk about it. Do you have on your list of things, do you have Patrice Bergeron on it?
I do. I certainly do.
Okay, then I'm not going to talk about it. Hit the sting. Let's get to it.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
It's Matt's Monday Mood Meter.
Are you kidding me? This baby is off the charts.
On TSN 1050. Mondays live here.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
All right, let's start with this. Producer Chris, you've had a couple weeks now. Have you seen the 94-minute long movie Office Space, where it looks like somebody's got a case of the Mondays, where that comes from? Have you seen it yet?
I have not. I'm not going to lie to you, Matt, but I'm going to get on it tonight. I'm going to go home, and I'm going to watch it tonight, and I'm going to have my, instead of Report Cause, it's going to be Report Chris, and I'm going to tell you about it tomorrow.
Oh, we're going to do both, because we're going to do a Report Cause, because I'm really strident on my Jays take, but we'll get to that in a second. All right, time for Matt's Monday Mood Meter. What do you got first?
All right, let's start on the diamond. How are you feeling about George Springer's health if you are Blue Jays manager John Snyder? Springer is once again on the IL, this time with a nagging elbow injury, and it's reportedly going to require some sort of off-season procedure to fix.
I am absolutely terrified because they have been trying for ages to keep him playing. You know, they would they'd mix in days off. They would use him as a DH from time to time. Before he went on the IL, he had missed 4 of 5 games. Like, this does feel, and again, no knowledge. I'm not there in the locker room. If it wasn't for the fact I'm bad at math and science, maybe I would have gone into the medical profession, but those two little speed bumps are keeping me away. But just the actions of the Blue Jays feel like a team that sees there is 11 leaks in the dam and they only got 10 fingers. So I am terrified right now if I am Blue Jays management. And listen, we know you got Whit Merrifield and that speed demon around the bases. He was safe at third on Sunday. I thought he was out at the home at home. But anyway, I am terrified.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's hard to look at it any other way, really, when you think about what a pivotal piece Springer is for the team. So definitely reason for concern. How are you feeling if you are the Padres after getting swept over the weekend by the Dodgers? Much has been made about all the additions San Diego has made, but they did not pay off over the weekend, and the Dodgers increased their lead in the NL West.
Let's see, what's the best... I'm not really necessarily nervous just because, much like the Blue Jays, I'm not expecting to be able to win the American League East. You know, so same thing with the NL West. If I am San Diego, what I am is I am pensive. That might not be the right word.
No, I think that's good. That's a good word.
I am pensive. But more about Fernando Tatis Jr. All my eyes are on the rehab stint with Tatis. That is sort of where my attention is. You know, last night, Soto, Machado, and Bell, no hits, obviously no RBI, a couple walks for Soto, who's walking like a machine out there. But I think all my attention is, you know what it is? I'm going to distract myself from getting swept by the Dodgers, and all my focus is on the health of Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah, you know, I don't really want to overreact to one series too much. It is, after all, like you said, pretty unlikely the Padres are going to catch the Dodgers. But, you know, I look at the other side of it, I do kind of wonder if that's deflating. Like, they must have been entering that series against L.A., like, riding really high, you know, thinking everything's going to start turning, you know, towards a good outcome for the rest of the season. But I don't know. I kind of do wonder if it's maybe a little bit deflating for them. I think that might be the word that I would personally use.
You know what? Your word's better. Your word's better. The Padres now, with that loss, they now have the last wild card spot. Philly is a half game up on them. And, of course, the annoying Atlanta Braves. Hey, I love you, Anthopoulos. They got the number one. They got the number one. But, yeah, it's deflating. It's like, wait a minute. We did the big move right now, and the Brewers are only a game and a half back, and they traded away Hader.
All right, let's do one more on the diamond, and it's another sweep. How are you feeling if you are the New York Yankees after being swept this weekend by the Cardinals? This continues the trend of blah play from the Yankees, who are 12-18 over their last 30 games.
I'm conflicted because I want to be scared. Well, let's see here. They actually now, like, looking at it, the Dodgers got the best record in baseball. They are now tied with the Mets. I'm pissed that I got the same record as the Mets, who are 8-2, and Jacob DeGrom looks so good out there, and their relievers coming in the ninth inning, and the horns are playing, and everyone's happy. I am cross town envious is what I am. We got the same record as the Mets, but they're a bunch of heroes, even though we've got our run differentials 90 better than them. But I am cross-town envious.
You know, I'm sure that George Steinbrenner is rolling over in his grave right now, knowing that the Yankees are tied with the Mets. So, that's a fair way of looking at it, for sure. Yeah. I do kind of wonder if a little bit of doubt is maybe creeping into the minds of the...
Seeping in.
Not a lot, but, I mean, they do still have a 9.5-game lead over the Blue Jays, but... I would say that the dream is not totally dead for the division, for the Blue Jays. Do you think it's, like, totally dead?
I think it's dead. It's 9.5 games. That's a lot.
It is for
August. That is a ton. Yeah, and put it this way. If the Jays were playing the 2020 Baltimore Orioles, I'd be like, oh, 15 games against them. They're going to go 12-3, and I give it a chance. But this stupid Orioles team is it's four games over 500. It's hot right now, 7-3 in their last 10, and they got a plus scoring differential themselves, run differential. So, yeah, no, if I don't see the division being open for the Jays. I don't see a path.
All right, you slightly teased it earlier, so we will get to it now. How are you feeling about your team's chances of contending this season if you are Patrice Bergeron?
Okay, sorry. I just say that again because I just started yelling.
How are you feeling about your team's chances of contending this season if you are Patrice Bergeron? You just signed a very team-friendly deal, which leaves your team some wiggle room, but this season could be tough with Marchand and McAvoy set to miss the beginning of the season.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to hijack this. If I'm Patrice Bergeron, I'm feeling hopeful because I'm an athlete. Every athlete has got a massive ego, and they're just going to wait for the playoffs. But I'm pissed off by this. The real question should have been, Matt, as a Maple Leaf fan, how are you feeling about Patrice Bergeron? Chris, help me out here. Who won the Selke last year?
I believe that was one Patrice Bergeron.
65 points in 73 games. I know he had some injuries. The man won the Selke. 1 year deal. He's making, and I know, listen, I know there's performance-based incentives that could pay him another $2.5 million. Well, and I, as a Leaf fan, you better hope those performance-based incentives are, can you spell Bergeron and you get that money? Alex Kerfoot makes $1 million more than Patrice Bergeron. Alex Kerfoot, I feel like Mugatu and Zoolander. I feel like everyone's taking crazy pills here. Do you realize Patrice Bergeron is making $250,000 more than Pierre Engvall? Why? Why is this, Chris? Why is this in every other bleeping team that is somehow competitive against the Maple Leafs? They got player team-friendly contracts all over the place, and Toronto has none. This deal is a slap in the face to Brandon Pridham and to Kyle Dubas and to Shanahan. You know what they're doing? You know what they're doing right now? This is a troll job. Congratulations, Boston. This is a troll job by you to piss off Leaf fans. You know what happened? You know what happened, Chris? The moment we saw this deal, everyone did what I did. I immediately went to Cap Friendly. I went to Cap Friendly and I started scanning. Who are the contracts that are near Patrice Bergeron's? And then I see old money bags, Alex Kerfoot, $1 million more, and Pierre Engvall, $250,000 less. Oh God, this one always angers me so much.
Yeah, this is just another example of. It's certainly not the first. We've seen Colorado, Tampa Bay, Boston, all of those teams, whether it's through management or the players themselves, they establish culture. We are going to take less because we want the team to win. And there's no question that as a Leafs fan, you have to pull your hair out given what transpired here over the last few years. To play devil's advocate a little bit, there is context here. He is old. He's 36 or 37, and he's trying to give his team a little bit of flexibility. It's not as though this is a 28-year-old Patrice Bergeron who signed a 4-year deal for 2.5. Like, this is, this is the latter, the tail end of his career. So
the tail end of his career that won a Selke.
Yeah, I know. Okay, let me say this. I wanted to ask you this. Do you have those players in sports where you were so certain before everyone else that they were going to be good, and not only good, but maybe even great? For me, Patrice Bergeron and Joe Pavelski were those guys for me. I loved them before they were popular, and I will die on that hill.
Let's see. Adrian Peterson. Okay. I remember watching Adrian Peterson as a freshman at, I believe it was Oklahoma. And it took about a game. I'm like, ooh, that guy's going to be great in the pros. It's the first one that comes to my head. I don't want to try to do the, even that's kind of an obvious one. I'm trying to think of who's the guy that sort of maybe you weren't fully in on, but that's always the first name that I think of, where you just, it didn't take long. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy's going to be a star on Sunday.
AP is a good one for sure. Let's go from one running back to another. How are you feeling if you are Kareem Hunt now that your trade request has been denied? Hunt will be an unrestricted free agent at year's end and is probably looking for a contract in the $10 million per year range.
If that's what I'm feeling delusional. I am feeling so delusional. If I'm Kareem Hunt, I'm begging to get Justin Tucker money. the kicker for the Ravens, who just signed like a 4-year deal for like $24 million, and like $17.5 million of it is guaranteed. I got it. I'm Kareem Hunt. You know what my emotion is? I am regretful. I am regretful that I, as a child, I said, yeah, I'll play running back. Where it's like, it doesn't matter what I do, I know I'm not getting that next contract. And whatever the next contract is, it's not going to be for a lot of money. There is no leverage. There is no leverage if you are Kareem Hunt. Cleveland's fine. They have Nick Chubb. They have some other running backs there on the roster. They got rookie Jerome Ford. They got their Ernest Johnson. And listen, Kareem Hunt's really good, but teams don't pay for that. They just don't pay for 27-year-old running backs. So I am regretful that I chose to be a running back. If he was smart, he would have used his legs to learn how to kick a football instead of run with one, where he can make just as much money and have a safer career.
Regretful, very good word. I think you nailed that. Pretty apt. Yeah. I was driving in, like we discussed this morning, and I was listening to First Up, and they had Mark Dominic on, and he brought up the point, like, if you're the Browns, why are you going to trade him? Like, honestly, it's like as soon as you trade him, Murphy's Law will dictate that Nick Chubb will go down for the year. And like you said, he has no leverage in the situation. So I really don't see the benefit of trading him if I'm the Browns. And then you also got to look at, like, what's the market for running backs? Like, you're not
going to get much.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You're going to get a 6th-round pick for him. You're going to get nothing for him. And again, he's a good player. But this is still the running back position. So, yeah, I would, no way. No, I'm regretful.
All right, let's go to another one. And they were also discussing this on First Up this morning, so I figured I would piggyback off of it. How are you feeling if you are drafting first overall in your fantasy football league and you want to take Christian McCaffrey? The guys on the show this morning were going back on whether McCaffrey or Derrick Henry is the better bet to finish as the RB1 this season.
So it was Derrick Henry or Christian McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not taking either of those guys. Nope. I'm not taking either. It's Jonathan Taylor number one.
I'm with you.
And you know what? It's Nick Chubb too. Cleveland's got a really good offensive line. They got a good blocking tight end. The only reason you're nervous about it is they're going to load up 7 or 8 in the box. But the Steelers actually had the worst rush defense in the NFL last year. I think the Bengals were good, not great. We'll see about the Ravens. But I'm not going anywhere near Christian McCaffrey. Listen, you go take the cape, go put the cape on, go be a hero, and take Christian McCaffrey. And you say to yourself, this year's going to be different. This year, I've learned my lesson. Do not do it. In fact, I would take Najee Harris. I would take Dalvin Cook. There are so many running backs. I don't want McCaffrey. I don't want that. If I'm drafting number one, I'm actually a little bit bummed out. I'm probably going receiver. If I'm picking number one, I might go receiver.
See, for me, I think Jonathan Taylor is the clear 1-1 this year.
Yes.
And I say that as somebody who has him in a keeper in my main league, because I'm sure the listeners care a lot about
congratulations.
That. But I will say, to play devil's advocate for McCaffrey, if everything does click and this guy gets back into shape and he stays on the field, like in full point PPR formats, this guy
of
is
course,
a monster.
He's incredible. We all know it. What is the okay? When I type, when I do my my script, my lineup for the show, I use a 12 font. 12. You use the word if McCaffrey stays healthy. How big of a font are you using for the I and the F?
24.
You're
doubling it, I think.
yeah. Exactly. I'm not taking. Okay, I can tell you right now. And unless they fall so far that people are taking their second tight end, McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott. I want nothing to do with any of them. Nothing.
I mean, I get the concern about them, but I mean, I do think at a certain point within, I don't know, the first 25, 30 picks, like they do become value at that point.
I know, but they'll be gone by then. I just don't want to be the guy. I'm going to see that grenade floating there, and I don't want to take it. I don't want to fall in it.
All right, last one here. We're going to go from the American football to the footy version of football. How are you feeling if you are a fan of TFC after seeing the recent increase in ticket prices? Tickets have jumped in recent weeks by anywhere between $50 and $90 after several new players were acquired. An average ticket to BMO now costs at least $100.
I'm feeling a little bit betrayed. If I'm a TFC fan, especially the ones that have been, following the team so closely, and maybe they'll be able to turn things around with all the Italians with Insignia on, and they won the other day, but they're still 13th. They're 13th in the Eastern Conference. So I'm feeling betrayed.
All right, that's probably a fair way to summarize it, especially for those people who were, day oneers with TFC when things were not the best.
On the other side, good job by you. On the other side, we'll play you some fun sound from Juan Soto, and we'll get back into some baseball betting. That's coming up next right here on Gameplay. Yeah! There was two very memorable sweeps over the weekend. The Yankees are now taking on Seattle. They got swept. And the Dodgers swept the San Diego Padres, which has got to be disheartening for them, certainly after they got Juan Soto on the team. And there was a really funny moment. It was in the seventh inning. It was 2-0 Dodgers. Bellinger at the plate, and he hits a home run. But here, Juan Soto was wired for sound, and he tried his best to keep this ball from leaving the park. It didn't, but it sounded like this.
Okay, we're players.
Stay here. Stay here. Stay here.
It did not stay here. Cody Bellinger out of the 9 spot hits his 14th home run of the year, and the Dodgers lead it 1-0.
Tyler Anderson. Tyler Anderson, and the who goes to 13-1 on the season, 7 innings pitched, no runs, 2 hits, 3 strikeouts, 1 walk. As a team, the Dodgers allowed just 2 hits, 2 walks, and had 4 strikeouts. That is as dominant a performance. You know, I know Jacob DeGrom was incredible there, Chris, but that is as dominant a performance as you're going to see from a pitching staff against the Padres.
It is, and it's like, it's funny. Like, we look at the Tampa Bay Rays as this pitching factory, but I think the Dodgers in many ways deserve the label just as much as the Rays. It just seems like no matter who these guys lose, every single year, they either have the money to go replace him, or they already have somebody lined up in the system to just step in seamlessly. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of reasons for it that are explainable. The Dodgers spend more
money.
They spend more on international scouting than pretty much any other team. They have a bigger budget for, you know, their roster than pretty much any other team. So maybe it shouldn't come as such a surprise that they offer kind of this unparalleled depth, but it's remarkable. Like Dustin May, he's been out all year. He's arguably their best pitching prospect. He had Tommy John last year. He's getting ready to step into the rotation in the next couple of weeks. It just feels like it never ends with the Dodgers.
Speaking of never ending, on Sunday, the Yankees lose to the Cardinals 12-9, a game that took 4 hours and 25 minutes as the Cardinals sweep the Yankees. Meanwhile, the Mets beat the Braves. Jacob DeGrom carried a perfect game into the 6th inning against Atlanta, retiring the first 17 batters he faced. 12 strikeouts, just ridiculous. The Mets pitching staff managed 19 strikeouts, which I think tied franchise high in a 9-inning game in their 5-2 win over Atlanta. Going back to betting for a moment here, again, and I'll get your thoughts, Chris. For me, when it comes to the Blue Jays, I think they win this series against Baltimore, but I think they lose tonight. And I think they lose tonight. The obvious one is Kikuchi is on the mound. There's no reason why at all I should trust him. He's going up against Jordan Lyles. Lyles is having the better season, not by a ton, but certainly the pitching matchup goes to Baltimore. Baltimore has been a supremely hot team. Toronto will not have Tim Mesa, who injured himself on Saturday. A collision was injured his right shoulder. Also, because Jordan Romano pitched 2 innings yesterday, I don't think you're going to see him. So the Jays are going to have to rely on other pitchers, lesser quality pitchers from their bullpen. Then on top of that, no George Springer. So I'm going to go with the Baltimore Orioles, and I get them on the money line at plus 120. The Jays are the better team. Baltimore is a little bit hotter, and I think Toronto's bullpen is going to be limited tonight. So I will take the Jays. I'm also going to take the first half money line. I'm going to bet Baltimore at plus 118. And finally, I'm betting the over of 1.5 runs in the first inning. Baltimore, their rotation as a whole isn't great in terms of ERA, and you got Kikuchi, you got a lot of bats, but I'm getting that at plus 194. So I think there'll be at least 2 runs scored in the first inning at plus 194. I think Baltimore leads after the first 5 innings. I get that at plus 118. Finally, I'm taking Baltimore on the money line at plus 120. Those are my bets today.
I can get behind most of those. And you asked me earlier in the show how if you were drawing me closer to the murky middle. Yeah. And you know what? The more I hear you talking about this, the more I do kind of think tonight maybe is a spot for the Orioles. I think more than anything, this game might be a bit of a stay away for me. I just don't really think that there's tremendous value on either side. But you are drawing me in a little bit in the sense where if the Orioles are going to get a game in this series, it's a fair
this one.
Yeah, it's a fair bet to guess that it might be tonight when Kikuchi's on the mound.
Kikuchi's on the mound in the first. Romano won't be in the mound in the ninth. So for that, I am taking Baltimore. I feel pretty, pretty good about it. We are going to get on the other side every day for the next 4 weeks. We are covering a different NFL team. Today it is the Baltimore Ravens. And we'll get in to the Lamar Jackson conversation, maybe the most fascinating one. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaz. And every day for the next 4 weeks, we are focusing on a different NFL team to get you set for the season, chat a little fantasy, a little betting. Mostly it's just team previews. And today we started off with one of the more interesting teams in football. I'm going to tell you right now, this conversation probably be a little more interesting than when we're talking about, say, the Jaguars. From Locked On Ravens podcast and the managing editor for RavensWire.com for USA Today, Kevin Ostreicher is on the line. Kevin, thanks so much for joining the show.
Yeah, guys, thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be the first one. It's been a busy day over here in Baltimore with all the news that's come out so far.
Oh, yeah. Well, the biggest news is that your kicker has now been locked up for 4 more years?
You know, it would have been. That was great news. But actually, the Ravens just activated J.K. Dobbins with the physical examiner before missing back on the practice field today, which is big news. He was one of those players who tore his ACL right before the season started, and there was a ton of excitement around him right now.
All right, you know what? Let's go there. We're going to get to all things Lamar Jackson. I'm sure you're a little Lamar Jackson doubt. But is it fair to say that the Ravens season would have ended differently? I guess the Jackson injury is part of this, but just with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. I mean, just the Ravens last year just got decimated at the running back position.
Yeah, it is definitely fair, and it goes beyond the running back position. But just to clarify on the running backs, I mean, there was so much excitement surrounding J.K. Dobbins in particular, also Gus Edwards, who had been improving every single season. But Dobbins, during his rookie year, averaged the most yards per carry out of any running back in the league with 6. He was actually 3rd in the league in yards per carry behind his teammate Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray. So you're looking there, and the injury is just devastating. But the thing was, it didn't happen like a month before the regular season or 2 months. It happened like 10 days before the season was supposed to start. So they had to go out there. They signed Devonta Freeman. They signed Le'Veon Bell, Latavius Murray. And there was a lot of a learning curve. These guys had to pick up the mesh point with Lamar Jackson, one of those things. And the offense just was not the same. Now, you mentioned the Jackson injury. That obviously had a key part in their 6-game losing streak to end the season. Really, ever since the Miami game in Week 10, that was really the beginning of the end, it seemed like. Because this Ravens team, I want to give them a ton of credit. John Harbaugh and all those guys, they had this team, injuries and all, at 8-3 through 12 weeks, the top seed in the AFC. So with these injured guys coming back, hopefully we'll see more of J.K. Dobbins' return, such as Ronnie Stanley, Marcus Peters, Gus Edwards, etc. I think this team has a ton of potential next year.
Well, the way you could see that is on FanDuel, I was looking at the over-under win totals for every team. Only the Buffalo Bills and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had a higher win projected win total than the Ravens. And I think it's fair to ask, Kevin, the team went 0-4 down the stretch when Lamar Jackson was out for the season. If Jackson is healthy and one of the running backs are healthy, there's a chance it could have been Baltimore that had gone to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the fact that the Ravens had stayed afloat for that long, and obviously the Jackson injury kind of was the bow in terms of they're probably not making the playoffs, but the fact that they went through a week one loss to the Las Vegas Raiders, they bounced back, they beat Kansas City in week two, who they hadn't beaten in Lamar Jackson's tenure as a starting quarterback there. That was his first win against Patrick Mahomes and company. That kind of gave you a little bit of, oh, okay, this team could be something special. The Detroit game, the Justin Tucker 66-yarder. There were so many moments early on. I mean, Lamar Jackson was in the MVP conversation through the first 5-6 weeks of the year before the first Cincinnati game where the Ravens did get blown out by them. But I think that if they had one or two less major injuries. They could have definitely made a spot in the playoffs. And it all comes down to health, really, in the NFL. We saw teams like the Bengals and the Rams, the two representatives in the Super Bowl, be relatively healthy throughout the year. When the Ravens were 14-2 in 2019, they were relatively healthy. So I think that this team this year, there is the potential, but it does rely on the health of their guys. And if they can stay healthy, the Ravens have taken steps throughout training camp. They've moved practices from mornings to afternoons to try to get the players in the building a little more, to get some more work in before practice. They've been trying so many different things to get the injuries down this year, and I think their effort is really, it's applauded by me, because they understand what the problem was. They're trying to fix it right now.
Yeah, and then also Marcus Peters as well at the cornerback position, another important piece that was injured last year. From Locked On Ravens podcast, it is Kevin Ostreicher. All right, Kevin, let's get to it. The Lamar Jackson conversation. And let's start here, because we all understand there's some of the criticism that's been unwarranted. Sometimes that's just for clickbait, and it's always more interesting to go, Lamar Jackson, Yeah, he won the MVP, but it'll never be great, because it just gets people angry and confused. But let's go here. How much criticism is warranted? How much of the criticism of Lamar Jackson is justified?
Well, some of it is, and I'm not going to sit here and say that Lamar Jackson is a perfect player, that he is, you know, the best quarterback of all time. He still has some growing to do. Now, we've seen him grow in a bunch of different areas. I can go back to last year, where, and this wasn't all his fault, I want to say the offensive line played a part in this, but
yes,
his decision-making down the stretch was not as sharp as I had seen it in recent years. Now, I talk about the offensive line because Ronnie Stanley missed the entire year outside of one game last year. The right tackle situation, they were kind of rotating guys in and out. By the end of the year, by the end of Lamar Jackson's season, he was running around for his life on every single play, and that did lead to some sped-up clocks and sped-up decision-making. And there's a ton that goes into it, but there were some decisions. I mean, Lamar Jackson had four interceptions against Cleveland very late in that year, and the Ravens still won the game, which is incredible. But he had four interceptions. Some of those were his own fault. Others were not. So I'm anticipating an uptick in decision-making from him where, you know, in some instances, look, he is a quarterback. He is a great quarterback. He wants to throw the football, and he's a good thrower of the football as well, but sometimes he will tuck the ball and run when he has a wide open throwing lane. Sometimes he will throw the ball when he has a wide open running lane. So some of those things, you know, you give and you take, but at the same time, I think that all the criticism that he gets, not all of it is warranted and justified whatsoever, because you're right, there is the Lamar Jackson effect on the field. I think there's that Lamar Jackson effect off of the field too, where people are just so almost stuck in their ways, it seems like, from maybe his college days, where, look, he was very raw as a passer coming out of college. He has improved upon that, and I do want to give him credit for that, but I still think he has room to improve, which in a way, I mean, makes it kind of a scary thought for other teams based off of the improvement that he can make.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Ronnie Stanley healthy, running backs healthy. That in and of itself is going to make him better. I think for me, my concerns are the stereotypical ones. Or to me, the legitimate ones. One, health, even though he's big. Like, you can't do the RG3 thing. We were talking about it earlier because he's much bigger. I think he's now like 230 pounds. But the other one is just he hasn't performed. His numbers go down. Even though sometimes the yardage is high, in the playoffs, he has not looked like the same guy he was in the regular season. That's my only, you know, that's my criticism of him, but I'd still take him over, say, like a Dak Prescott, but that to me is my criticism of Lamar Jackson.
And I think the health for any quarterback is definitely a valid concern.
Yeah.
And I know when you're looking at Lamar Jackson's play style, some people look at it and say, well, you know, the more he runs, the more hits he takes, you know, the less sustainable. But I don't see it that way specifically. I'll give the examples. When Lamar Jackson has gotten injured, the couple times he's gotten injured, he hasn't even missed a lot of games. The ankle thing that he had was his first real major injury, the bone bruise that he had. But he got injured on that play because his offensive line couldn't block, and he was running out of the pocket and trying to find someone to throw the ball to and threw the ball away and then kind of got tripped up. The play that he got injured in Buffalo during that 2021 playoff game is because his center snapped the ball over his head. He had to run back, threw the ball away, and then he smashed his head on the ground. So, look, I mean, the actual facts of everything is, look, the more hits you take, the more risk there is for injury. But I will say that Lamar Jackson has most definitely improved his awareness in terms of his body. His rookie year, I think he took a lot of unnecessary hits where he was fighting for that extra yard or two instead of maybe getting out of bounds and took some shots because of it. But he has much more, I think, body awareness, and he's done that ever since his second year on. So, look, he hasn't gotten injured a ton. It's not as much of a concern for me, but this is football. I mean, injuries can happen at any time with any different player. So that's where I am on that. And I think for him, he's a guy that has shown good health, and that's kind of where I'll ride out with this track record right now.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's more about projecting ahead. It just makes you nervous. But, no, you're right. I mean, if you just look at the amount of games played, he's played in a ton. We're just waiting for that real signature playoff moment. How do they replace Marquise Brown? Is this as simple as Rashad Bateman and Devon Duvernay? What is it looking like now in training camp in terms of the receivers?
Yeah, they're going in-house. It seems like they brought in a lot of undrafted rookies who it seems like they're going to rely on, but they have almost like a big four of guys. Rashad Bateman, their first-round pick in 2021, is the new number one now. You mentioned Devon Duvernay. He's, I guess, right now on the depth chart number two, but you also have James Prochet, who's looked strong. Tylan Wallace, who was a fourth-round pick last year. But it seems like the Ravens are going more towards the 2019 offense. Now, they probably won't go completely back to that. I think this is going to be much more of a balanced offense than what we saw in 2019, but definitely still a run-first team. So at this stage, I predict the Ravens will keep four running backs. I predict they will keep four tight ends. That leaves five wide receivers for me. So I think that spot, whether they want to bring in a veteran player, Julio Jones, now off the market, so you're looking at guys more along the lines of Will Fuller, T.Y. Hilton, but I don't know if those are necessarily needle movers at this point. Odell Beckham Jr. is another one that's popped up with his ACL injury. There's a lot of unknowns there. But there have been some undrafted guys who have been turning heads in practice. Jalen Moore has looked good, Shamar Bridges, and also you look at Slade Bolden. Jalen Moore's been around the team for a little bit, but Bridges and Bolden, two guys who were undrafted for them. So they're going in-house. They're confident. They didn't sign a veteran. They didn't draft anybody after trading away Marquise Brown. The Marquise Brown, you know, loss is a big one. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but I think they can respond to that and bounce back. They just have to hope that their second and third-year guys can take a leap here.
Before we let you go, and by the way, I appreciate you joining the show, and you can check out his work. Again, Locked On Ravens podcast, and go to ravenswire.com. Kevin, over under 10.5 wins. Where, as of today, where would you lean?
I'm smashing the over on that. I think that the Ravens, an underrated part of their year this year is the fact that they play a last-place schedule. They finished last in the AFC North in 2021. Now, the six-game losing streak definitely had a part in that, but they finished with the same record as the Browns, but tiebreakers kind of flipped everything around. So I think for the Ravens, they will be playing teams, and obviously you can never count out a team, even if they're, you know, a last-place team in the NFL. But their schedule is significantly easier than what we saw from them last year. I think with the guys they are getting back, they had a great free agency period. They had a good draft as well. I think that this is a team positioned to make a run at the AFC North crown right now. I have them winning the AFC North crown literally by a tiebreaker with Cincinnati. I have them at 13-4. Now, that can obviously change in either direction as the offseason goes on, the preseason and whatnot. But I think this will be a two-team race between Baltimore and Cincinnati, a very close one at that, a very talented division. But I think the Ravens, I'm smashing that over, definitely, and I have 13 right now.
One guy in fantasy, you would tell people, hey, put this Baltimore Raven player a little bit higher than what everyone else is projecting.
I know the obvious answer is Lamar Jackson. I'll give you a different one, though. I think for me it's Rashad Bateman, 100%. I know people look at the Ravens and think this is a run offense. Receivers aren't going to do well in it. But the Ravens have shown that they are committed to both running and throwing the football. Lamar Jackson, again, I talked about that improvement as a passer. And what we've seen so far from Rashad Bateman in training camp, he has clearly developed a rapport with Lamar Jackson, and they have been on the same page for the entirety of camp. So I'm predicting a big year from Rashad Bateman. I'm trying to get him in all my fantasy leagues. Some people are more willing to give him to me than others, but I think that for me, Bateman's my guy.
Kevin? Really appreciate. Thanks so much for joining the show. It is our part one of 32 of our NFL team preview. We're trying to go through each and every team between now and the start of the season, get people ready for either bets, fantasy, and everything in between, or just yammering about football. So I appreciate you joining.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm honored to be the first one. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That is really appreciate you joining the show today. And it's man, the Ravens are going to be, I think, a really interesting team this year. And I would hit the over as well. And gameplay on TSN 1050 is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Coming up on the other side, Kevin Durant goes full Kevin Durant. I'll explain right after this. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. I'd be curious to take a look at what the odds are for the Brooklyn Nets, what their win total is, odds of them winning the Atlantic, the East, and the NBA Finals. Because this is coming down from the Athletic Sham Sharnia. And I'm just going to read this. In a face-to-face meeting with the Brooklyn Nets owner Joe Tsai over the weekend, All-Star Kevin Durant reiterated his trade request and informed Tsai that he needs to choose between Durant or the pairing of general manager Sean Marks and coach Steve Nash. Sources, and you wonder who are these sources, have said that Durant does not have faith in the team's direction. Now, the owner and Kevin Durant, spoke in London on Saturday, and sources described the discussion as transparent and professional. This meeting took place a year to the day that Durant agreed to a four-year, $198 million contract extension. How much of this goes to the fact that they were swept by the Boston Celtics? All those games are super close. Is that why he's angry at Steve Nash? How much of his anger is the fact that back in a news conference in the middle of May, general manager Sean Marks came out and said the organization needs to regain its culture? How much of this is because the team wouldn't cave and give a long-term deal to the last guy you should probably give a long-term deal to, Kyrie Irving? Instead, Kyrie opted into his $36.5 million player option. Now, the Nets, you know, they traded for Royce O'Neal. They signed T.J. Warren. They brought back Patty Mills and Nick Claxton. You don't do those moves unless you think, oh, we can compete next year. I don't know about you. I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen, Chris. This feels to me like this that this whole time, it's just Durant pissed that the organization did not give Kyrie Irving everything he wanted. Like, that feels plain as day now.
I want to give our intern, Owen, a little bit of credit. He pointed out to me this tweet, and he also pointed out the fact that Durant and Nash had familiarity previously from their time together in Golden State.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just, I was telling Owen, it's like, Kevin Durant is one of my favorite players when it comes to on the court. Like, really, I think he is totally unmatched. But the guy makes himself so unlikable off the court. It's like, I get it. He's, in recent years, he's started leaning into it a little bit. I think he's sort of thriving in the role of heel.
He's a jackass. He is. No, that's what he is. That is 100% what he is. You're forcing the team to try to put their faith in Kyrie Irving. What has Kyrie Irving done the last bunch of years where he's allowed the benefit of the doubt?
Right, yeah.
What has he done? Like, I'm sorry, Kevin. He could be your best friend. You could be amazed at his handle. NBA players will rave and say no one has got a better handle than Kyrie Irving. Current day, maybe all time.
It's true.
But what has he done? What has he done to, like, he has not done anything to deserve a long-term extension. Like, Kevin Durant, like, at some point, you have to be able to look at your friends and say, no, this is on you as well. And maybe get a little bit thicker skin. Because, you know, when Marks came out, I was going to say Bobby Marks, when Sean Marks came out and said, we got to fix the culture here. Well, yeah, that's a shot at you, Durant. It's a shot at Kyrie. But instead of demanding everyone get fired, I feel like I'm doing tomorrow's opening thought. In fact, just record this and we'll play it tomorrow. We'll play this tomorrow at 1:09 p.m. on Tuesday. But maybe look at yourself. You're the one who wanted to bring in Steve Nash. You're the one that said fire Kenny Atkinson and bring in Steve Nash, and now this? Really?
Yeah, bad look. It's a tough look.
It's a horrible look.
And I don't know. It just goes to show you where his loyalties lie. Like you said, I think you can make a very reasonable case that Nash and Marks have done a decent job in their respective roles. But, I mean, Kyrie, I mean, is that really the guy you want to be tying your wagon to?
Yeah.
Just seems like a really questionable decision from Durant to put so much into Irving.
I have no idea if Steve Nash is a good coach. None. Zero. But I also know, look at just the chaos he has dealt with since he got there. Out of shape Harden.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie Irving refusing to play because he wouldn't get a vaccine and then is partying indoors without a mask on during the really heavy period of mask mandates. First year, Kevin Durant injured. In fact, Durant being in and out of injuries since the moment he became a Brooklyn Net. James Harden injured, out of shape. Oh, let's trade him for Ben Simmons. Oh, Ben's going to play this week. Oh, no, he's going to play next week.
Nope.
Oh, he's going to play the week after that. Oh, no, no, game four. He'll be there game four against Boston. Maybe game five. You could say Nash is a talent. He is. He just hasn't had it on the court. Sorry, what were we going to say?
I was just going to say, I think you laid that out perfectly. As much as Nash and Marks might not be perfect, it's hard to argue they've been dealt a good hand, given the players that they had and what was expected. I think just about everything that could go wrong has.
Yeah. For Durant, how about this? Go a year without being a bleep hole. By the way, Durant's an incredible player. And no one's going to forget what Kevin Durant did 2 years ago against Milwaukee, where basically on his own, he pushed the Bucks to the brink. He's an incredible player. And yes, I'm out here saying that Marks and Nash are that they are Jerry West and Phil Jackson. But at the same time, every moment, it seems you are just torching everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Kevin Durant will ever be happy. And that's kind of a shame. I don't think he'll ever be happy.
No, he loves to burn himself some bridges. Oh, that's for sure. God.
All right, we got to go to break. Now we're heavy. I blame you guys for putting this information in front of me because I'll just go off on that. I got some CFL stuff. We'll get to that at 3:15. But coming up on the other side, Chris Meany's going to join us. When it comes to all things fantasy, this guy is an absolute animal. So we will just do more. And again, if you're not a big fantasy football fan, don't worry. Basically, just an NFL preview. We'll do that in just a moment right here on Gameplay.